Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. We are in room 124, the Barnes Committee Room, Alaska State Capitol. Let the record reflect the time is 1:04 p.m. Today we have present Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Stutes, Representative Mina, Representative Sumner, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Linda Jensen with House Records, Susan Quigley with the LIO, and Angela Steffel, my committee aide. Thank you for your service, ladies. If everyone could silence their cell phones. Today we have two items on the agenda, HB 376, an act relating to transportation network and delivery network companies, and as well as SSCR 8, the Senate Special Concurrent Resolution Number 8, disproving Executive Order Number 131. First up is a House Transportation Bill, HB 376. My plan is to have a brief introduction and set the bill aside. We can go more in depth with this bill at the next hearing. My staff, Julie Morris, will introduce the bill, read the sectional into the record. We have some invited testimony online if needed. Allison Ford, Public Policy Manager for Uber Technologies, if we have any questions, along with Chuck Collins, Department of Labor, Workmen's Compensation Division. And unless there's real pressing questions, I would just like to introduce it and get it in the record, and then we'll have questions and all that stuff later on. So, Ms. Morris, if you could come to the table and present the bill, please.
Thank you, Chairman McCabe. Julie Morris, staff to Representative McCabe, and I will introduce HB 376 today. Over the past decade, the rise of transportation and delivery network companies has transformed the way people and goods are transported and delivered. These companies provide valuable services that enhance mobility, convenience, and accessibility for individuals and businesses alike. However, as the gig economy has expanded and questions have arisen regarding the classification of workers, their rights and protections under existing labor laws, House Bill 376 addresses these concerns by redefining the classification of workers within the transportation network companies, the TNCs, and the delivery network companies, the DNCs, sectors. It ensures that individuals who provide prearranged rides or delivery services through digital networks are properly classified as independent contractors. This bill will address policy inconsistencies, improve the working standards of delivery drivers in Alaska. This legislation aims to align the status of delivery drivers with that of rideshare drivers, recognizing them as essential contributors to the digital marketplace. Current distinction between rideshare and delivery drivers in relation to workers' compensation does not reflect the fluid nature of their roles, where drivers are often switched between passenger transportation and goods delivery. This creates needless uncertainty and potential inconsistency in the application of laws, undermining the flexibility and supplemental income opportunities that platform workers rely on. Furthermore, this bill seeks to ensure Alaska stays in line with development in other states where marketplace platforms workers across all platforms are treated uniformly. Such consistency is paramount in fostering fairness, understanding, and avoiding legal ambiguities in this fast-growing digital space. Similar to other states, Alaska should establish a policy environment that attributes equal regulatory treatment to all platform workers, regardless of their chosen platform. This will not only demonstrate Alaska's commitment to valuing all digital platform workers, but will also encourage a fair, inclusive digital marketplace. If the committee would like, I can read the sectional into the record.
Sure, if you don't mind, it would be great.
Not a mind at all. HB 376, an act relating to transportation network delivery network companies. Section 1. This section amends Alaska Statute 2330 230A by delineating individuals who are not covered by certain labor regulation. It specifies exemptions for various categories of workers, including part-time babysitters, cleaning persons, harvest help, sports officials, entertainers, commercial fishermen, taxicab drivers, participants of the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program, professional hockey players, or coaches, or qualified real estate licenses. Additionally, it introduces an exemption for delivery network company courier who provides delivery services or is otherwise logged on to the digital network of delivery network company under AS 2823080. Section 2, this section amends AS 2380A to establish the transportation network companies, the TNCs, and delivery network companies, the DNCs, are not employers of the TNCs or the DNC couriers under certain labor laws. It clarifies that TNC drivers and DNC couriers are independent contractors, not employees of the respective companies, provided that certain conditions are met, such as not imposing specific work hours, allowing drivers to use multiple digital networks, not restricting drivers from engaging in other occupations, and entering into a written agreement declaring the independent contractor status. Section 3. This section amends AS 2823181 to define digital network as an online enabled application software, website, or system used by transportation network companies or delivery network companies to facilitate prearranged rides or offers for delivery services. Section 4, this amends AS 2823180 by adding new definitions relating to delivery network companies, including company, delivery network company, delivery network company courier or courier, delivery services, and offer. These definitions clarify the roles and operations of delivery network companies and couriers within the digital network system. And that is the sectional.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it. So just for the committee, this is we're going to have to define these as this Uber and DoorDash and everything else gets more prolific in Alaska like they are in the lower 48. We seem to be a little bit behind the times with our definitions, so this is just adding some definitions in there. It's not really doing much else. My idea was just to introduce it now so we could fit it into a slot somewhere, as Bill's previously heard, and we'll set an amendment deadline and all that sort of stuff later. We're going to have the same issue with AI. We're going to have to start defining that as it comes up. So, anyways, Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the main purpose of this bill is actually just definitions. Is that right? I'm confused as to what the purpose of the bill is.
The purpose of the bill is it's definitions for the most part, because we had a situation where I don't want to get too deep into it, but where a delivery driver and a DoorDash was forced to provide workman's comp for himself. So kind of like a fisherman, like you and Stormy, right. and you're out on your boat, and, you know, do you have to provide workman's comp for just the two of you? So it's sort of the same thing. So it's just a little bit of a clarifying bill. And we can go through it later in great depth if you want. Representative Sumner.
I'll hold my comments for when we bring it back, yeah. Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to set this bill aside, and let's go on to the next topic, which is what I think you want to get to anyways.
Okay.
So I'll bring up SSCR 8 regarding EO 131 to reorganize the membership of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. To speak on this EO, we have DOT Commissioner Ryan Anderson via Teams and Andy Mills, DOT liaison, also via Teams. If you would both place your names on the record, or whoever wants to start, place your name on the record, and we can begin our discussion.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Ryan Anderson, and I'm the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities Commissioner. Thank you today, committee. I appreciate the opportunity to introduce EO 131. I wanted to say a few remarks to open this up. Number one, you know, the governor supports the marine highway system, and I believe this has been demonstrated through authorizing significant investment in the operating budgets, supporting investments in the vessel replacements and the improvements, rebuilding our ferry dock and terminal infrastructure, and in having a successful result for our three marine union negotiations a year ago with a 10% average 10% increase across the board. The Alaska Marine Highways Operations Board is important. You know, established in statute now more than ever, it's critical to DOT in establishing our short and long range plans for the ferry system so we can ensure that reliability and that service continues to improve. There's no doubt we're behind in our planning, and we continue to make decisions right now, these days, without short and long-term plans in place. As you can see in Executive Order 131, the bill does not change the number of members on the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board or the board member requirements. It simply requires that all board members are appointed by the governor. I believe we would all like to see the Alaska Marine Highways Operations Board contribute meaningfully to improvements in service and reliability for the system. On several occasions, it's been the dynamics of the board that have prevented it from performing some of its statutory duties. And as an example, one of the board's statutory duties is to complete a strategic plan for the Alaska Marine Highway System and provide recommendations concerning the operation and management of the system to the commissioner and the governor. And a year ago, it was recognized that the dynamics of the board was preventing those actions from occurring. And I did send out a letter in February of last year, reminding the board of the urgency in receiving, you know, and the department's ability to receive advice and the importance due to the fact that we were making critical decisions regarding personnel and operations. I do want to say that, you know, this action does not denigrate the board's work to date. There's good work that has been done, or the board members who have worked hard to contribute. But we feel at a policy level, boards such as the State of Alaska's Aviation Advisory Board, which is an 11-member board with three-year terms, and the Governor's Advisory Board on Roads and Highways, they've been more successful in being aligned and providing meaningful advice to the department. With that, Chair, if it's okay, I would offer up a read of the sectional by Mr. Mills.
Mr. Mills.
Thank you, Chair. And for the record, Andy Mills, Special Assistant Legislative Liaison for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. Apologies, my intention was to be with you there today, but a surgery scheduled here in Anchorage for something that could not be done in Juneau. So my apologies, I'm not there in person with you. Again, the Commissioner covered the sort of a policy perspective. I'm going to read through the sectional and just give a few short comments. From a practical standpoint, having facilitated the board for the last year, doing a sectional first. Again, there's five sections in EO 131. The first section one adds to the uncodified law of Alaska, amending it with findings that the governor would find in the best interest of efficient administration to reorganize the membership of the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. Section two amends AS 1965-120A to effectively reorganize the board so that the governor appoints all members to AMHOB. Section 3 amends AS 1965-120C, again, in respect to the service of years, the staggered six-year terms, that would again have the governor appointing all members. Section 4 adds to the uncodified law of Alaska, amending transition language for this executive order if it were to take effect. And Section 5, the last section, makes an effective date of July 1, 2024 of this year, if it is not disapproved. Again, the commissioner did cover from a policy perspective, from a practical perspective. I have seen differences between the various boards at DOT after serving and facilitating AMHOP, which I will reiterate the commissioner's comments that, again, the members of the board have participated significantly in meetings. I think at last count, we did have it at 24 meetings, which is a substantial number of meetings. It was, I think, 7 or 8 now, if you count the one on Tuesday in person. That is a significant effort when compared to many boards, and specifically at DOT with our Aviation Advisory Board and our Roads and Highways Advisory Board. Both of those boards, while one is in statute, one is a construct of an administrative order, they're all appointed by the governor, those members, and they do have recommendations and advice that are provided. And we certainly have noted a different dynamic with AMHOB, we do believe that is an appointment difference, and hence the executive order that's before you. So we've covered policy from the commissioner's standpoint, sort of a practical from mine. I know from the Department of Law, Morgan Griffin is on, and there is a very good question, which we did discuss when HB 63, the enabling legislation, which, again, for the room, kudos to Representative Stutz, who introduced and moved that bill through with the governor signing it. I know that Morgan would have the ability to step you through the powers question, because commissioner covered policy, I covered a bit of practical, and Morgan would cover the powers issue that's sort of about the base of the executive order being put forward. And I would also say, again, for Chair McCabe and many members, we appreciate how active you've been on seeking updates about AMHOB's activities and your willingness to engage on clearly being interested and engaged on matters with the Alaska Marine Highway System as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. So what's the will of the committee here? Do you want to hear from Morgan Griffin?
Questions.
Okay, so maybe that's what we'll do first is the committee has some questions for you, Commissioner, or Mr. Mills. So why don't we sort of go through those first, and then if we need to, we'll hear from Morgan Griffin. So Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair, Commissioner or Mr. Mills. In looking at the various, you know, differences in these boards and commissions that give recommendations to the department, would you say that some carry a fiscal responsibility of recommendations more so than the others?
Yeah, I'll... Again, for the record, Andy Mills, thank you for the question through the chair, Representative Vance. Yes, certainly we have looked at the amount of staff hours and time put in to generating requests for the board, activities for the board. Many of the statutory requirements of HB 63 certainly come with a significant effort. Much of that effort is needed for the Alaska Marine Highway System to have a long and short-term plan that seeks to solve, as I believe it was unanimous, if not almost nearly unanimous, on HB 63. Everyone recognizes that the Alaska Marine Highway System should have a long-range plan that provides for the department, for the legislature, and everyone else to have a longer-term vision so that there's not sort of ebbs and flows, if I'm using a pun from the sea, for the changes in the system, which have resulted in some issues over the years, I think we all acknowledge. The costs as far as the board are concerned and its activities are covered by the existing allocation, but it has definitely been quite a bit of staff time that I think when we were looking at HB 63, we did not put into a fiscal note. And we have largely absorbed, and that's been, Commissioner, please feel free to correct me, up to our office quite a bit of time
and down through quite a few resources that we've pulled, not just from AMHS, but from DOT as well, given our integrated and, you know, coordinated roles in the system.
Follow up. Thank you for that. I realized that I didn't ask my question in a very, very clear manner. I was a part of crafting that bill with Representative Stutes, and one of the concerns of the reason it was formed is because of the fiscal responsibility and the amount of money that's going to be needed to maintain the ferry system. One of the areas that I was reflecting upon was the two ferries that were finally rebuilt that did not fit our docks, that was costing us millions more, and felt that if we had something in place that was going to be able to anticipate, you know, changes and ask a lot of questions that maybe the department might miss, that that we could avoid those future costs. So there's a lot of anything that happens that the Marine Highway is dealing with seems to deal with millions. Do you see that type of fiscal, I don't want to say burden, but it's almost a burden of responsibility that the other commissions and boards are dealing with on the same level that the Marine Highway Board is?
Again, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Vance, I understand the question now. And I know, you know, Commissioner Anderson may also have something else to add to this, but I think that actually highlights an important question that comes to mind for me right now. One of the areas, if we were to give specifics for areas we would want more from the board, but it has largely been not silent, but hasn't focused. If I look at the statutory language, again, that HB 63 enabled, there is a section under AS 1965-180 that speaks to E, subsection E, the board shall, so this is not a may, this is a shall, provide advice and recommendations to the commissioner at DOT concerning the operation and maintenance. And if I get down to it, including advice and recommendations regarding business to enhance revenue and reduce costs. So far, enhanced revenue and reduced costs are not areas we've largely seen a focus or recommendations and advice. And speaking specifically to the cost of the system, we do look forward to having those conversations come forward at some point and getting advice and recommendations because, while again, this is the highway for coastal communities, I will, I'm sure Representative Stutes would assist me in reinforcing that message that this is the highway for our coastal communities. It is operationally an expensive system, and so anything we can do to reasonably look at cost efficiencies or revenue generation, and there's a lot of really creative solutions. That's why we bring the expertise from outside the department together and would look for that advice. And I'll end this by saying that the reshaping work group that predicated the HB 63 legislation, that was one of the recommendations from that group, which again, current member Juanita Ayers was a part of, and so thank her for her service on both of those, the reshaping and AMHA. It specifically wanted, and I've said this not in committee, but I'll say it here because I think it's effective to say the reshaping work group was to reshape the system for the future, not to rehash a vision of the past. And I think that what that's meant to say is we need to be creative and think about different ways that the system can provide the service the public expects, but in ways that maybe are not what we have done before. And that was the vision that passed on from the reshaping work group into HB 63 under the language that I was reading there, and certainly hope to have more of those conversations with the board as we haven't had many to date.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Stutes.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Commissioner and Andy. Nice to see you both. When this legislation first went into enactment, it was thought of, I am sure, by both myself and Representative Vance, if I could be so bold as to speak for you. I think we're kind of on the same page. We expected that this would be a collaborative effort between the department and this board to work in unison to look to the future and make our marine highway system a little more sustainable and a little more cost-effective, understanding that it will always have to be subsidized. And I don't think for the first 2 years that I ever missed a meeting. And I know for a fact that the first couple of years at least of this board in working with DOT, it was not a collaborative effort. And I heard many times the board ask for information, which they were simply not provided with. Well, it's hard to have a collaborative relationship under those conditions. I see in the last probably year, maybe year and a half, the board and DOT have in fact been working collaboratively. And I see that they are in fact making headway. The trajectory is really incredible between the efforts that DOT has put in and the efforts that the board has put in. So I guess I'm again confused as to why this EO even exists, but I think it's not good timing because I think you are working collaborative for the good of the state and for the good of the marine highway system as a whole and making it more efficient and more effective. And so I just am a little bit perplexed, and I'll just leave it at that for now, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Anyone else have any questions? So I think what we would like to do is Morgan Griffin is online, and we'd like you to walk us through what Mr. Mills told us that you were going to do. I guess it's HB 63 and the governor's ability to appoint or change the appointments from the legislature to him.
Yes, thank you to the chair. This is Morgan Griffin. I am a senior assistant attorney general in the Department of Law Civil Division. Can I just confirm that everybody can hear me?
Yep, hear you loud and clear. Thanks.
Perfect. So essentially what I want to do is provide the committee with a little bit of advice based on the Department of Law's understanding of the Constitution, the state Constitution. So essentially there is a bit of a dispute here about whether the governor's power of appointment is diluted by allowing another party or another entity or another branch of government to appoint members to an executive branch entity, and whether that's a violation of the Constitution. So, and I wanted to raise, I'm raising this because there is mention in the alleged legal memo of a 2016 Attorney General opinion that discusses that in some instances a legislator sitting on an advisory board might be permissible. In the legislative memo, this is on page 4, there is a conclusion, a legal conclusion that I think requires a lot more background and understanding before that conclusion can be arrived at. There's a reasoning from Ledge Legal that because of the advisory nature of the board, it's possible that a court would find that no separation of powers violations exist. By giving the power of appointment to the legislature that we wouldn't, because of the board is maybe not, it only provides advice. It doesn't, it doesn't adopt regulations. It doesn't enforce laws. Maybe because it has an advisory function, it might not be a violation of the Constitution, and the separation of powers doctrine. But I think it's really important to understand that was in reference to a 1977 Attorney General opinion that advised on whether it would be appropriate for a legislator to be sitting on an interim advisory board established by the governor under the governor's statutory authority to create interim advisory boards. And so it's a question of whether a legislator could sit on a board created by an administrative order, essentially. And in that situation, there was a conversation about, you know, well, is this a violation of the dual office holding clause in the Constitution? And this situation is a little different. There has, like I said, there's been a really large function about the advisory function of this board, and it might not be a violation. So we have to boil it down a little bit into if this is a situation of the separation of powers, and is this a potential violation of the separation of powers? Well, when we're talking about the separation of powers, we mean the state government is divided into three branches. It's separated into three branches: the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the judicial branch. The legislative branch has the power to legislate. The executive branch has the power to execute the law, and the judicial branch has the power to declare the law, you know, after, you know, cases and controversies, questions about the interpretation of the law. So essentially, the separation of powers doctrine prevents one branch of government from exercising the functions of another branch of government, meaning that the executive branch cannot make law. The executive branch doesn't have the lawmaking authority. If the executive branch was attempting to create law, or the judicial branch was attempting to create law, that would be an attempt to carry out a function of the legislative branch, which would be a violation of the separation of powers doctrine. So in this instance, we're not dealing with a legislator sitting or serving on a board. What we're dealing with is, can the legislature exercise the executive function of appointing members to an executive branch agency when that executive function is vested solely in the governor under the state constitution? And so, like I said, under Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution, the executive power is vested solely in the governor. To, I guess, make it a little more, I guess, layman's terms, to act for the state and to carry out the law is, by definition, an executive function. So these members of the board, their activities are controlled by the statutes, and the statute sets out what the powers and duties of the board are. So, as members of this board, they are acting for the state and carrying out the law. So they are performing an executive function. Like I said, there was a discussion about, well, maybe if it's an advisory board, it might not be violating the separation of powers. But like I said, with the separation of powers, well, what are the powers and how are they separated? And in this instance, we don't have an advisory branch. We have the legislative branch, we have the executive branch, and we have the judicial branch. So, and this isn't a question of the legislature sitting on a board, which is also constitutionally questionable. This is a question of whether, like I said, the one branch of government that has vested solely with the power of lawmaking can seize another branch of government power that's vested solely in that branch to appoint members to an executive branch body.
Okay, thanks, Ms. Griffin. Yeah, no worries. Let me sort of encapsulate what I think you said, because we're all kind of looking at each other a little confused here. So I'm pretty sure what you are saying is, if they're just advisory, then they advise, and having a legislative appointee on the board is just fine. But when they shift over to what the governor believes they are doing, which is more than advising, then they become his, and that's where the disagreement, if you will, or where the attention lies is the governor feels like he wants that board to be more decision-making and more his in carrying out the full executive powers of the government. And maybe that's not what we envisioned when we first put the board together. We envisioned to be more advisory in nature. So, and maybe Mr. Mills might be the best one to comment on that because he's been in on every meeting, and I know you have as well. But
it's clearly in
it. Yes, to the chair, I can respond to that. I think so. The reason why I brought up the advisory nature, that is not an important. That's not an aspect or a component of the legal analysis in the situation of. The question is really, does this violate the separation of powers? And so, like I said, whether or not a body of a state entity is advisory in nature, that doesn't lend into the question of whether a legislator can serve or whether a legislator can appoint somebody to the board. That's like I said. In some instances, if a legislator is sitting on a board that it was created not by statute, right? So the legislature doesn't create a law in statute, and then, like in this situation, the legislature has already created a law, it's in statute, and then can, on the other hand, decide how the law is carried out. That is performing an executive function. And so the advisory nature, that's not really in an analysis, part of the analysis. So but it's really a question of, is it an executive? Has the function that is vested in one branch of the government, has that function been improperly delegated or assigned to another branch of government such that the separation of powers doctrine is violated? And I mean, we can get into all kinds of, there's semantics, but really the legal definition of execute, when we talk about execute the law and the executive function, is to perform or complete as in a contract or in a duty. So, and we could talk to, like, for example, I am an attorney in the civil division of the Department of Law. My job is to advise departments on legal issues. That my job is solely an advisory function. I don't have authority to force a state agency or a public official to do something. I don't have the legal authority to arrest anybody. I have the authority to give legal advice, under the statutes that set out what the Attorney General's authorities are. And so every day when I come to work, I am executing the law by following the guidance, that's set in statute.
Thanks.
So just because I'm providing advice doesn't mean that I'm not an executive branch employee.
Okay, we're a little bit in the weeds for what we really need. So I appreciate your analysis and if you'd hang on in case there's any other questions, I'd appreciate it,
Chair, if I could just offer one more thing that hasn't really been raised yet, but as the statute reads now, without the change proposed in the executive order, it gives the power to remove certain members, the individuals that are appointed, chosen by the legislative members. They serve at the pleasure of those legislative members. Under Article 3, Section 16 of the Constitution, the governor is responsible for the faithful execution of the laws. So generally, the power to appoint is the power to remove. Coming along with the power to appoint is the power to remove. So while the governor is making sure all of the different entities in the executive branch are executing the law faithfully or following the law, if he knows that there is somebody that is, ignoring statute, not complying with their duties, he has the power to remove them. In this situation, he's a little hamstringed and not able to carry out his responsibility for the full faithful execution of the laws. If there are certain members that are not potentially, if they were not following the law, he would not be able to remove them as required under the Constitution. So there's another constitutional concern there.
Okay.
But I, I'll finish, and thank you.
Thank you very much. So.
I think Sarah had a question than I do.
Sarah.
I have a question.
Advance.
Sorry.
I have a question. I'm a little nervous to ask it.
Who are you asking the question of? Mr. Mills, perfect.
I don't think Mr. Mills would be comfortable answering this question. Maybe I could just make a statement, and if you want it to be a question,
sure.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to note for the record that this same governor signed the bill, thus agreeing with the creation of this board as written in statute. So I find there to be a conflict that now wanting to say, no, you can't have the legislative appointees on there. They should only be appointed by me, and bringing legal or Department of Law to come in and say, well, there's a separation of powers issue. The bigger question here, if this is such a pressing concern, why was it not brought up when the bill was originally before the governor? And I know that, you know, maybe the commissioner, I don't know if you have an answer for us at the time, but that's kind of the pressing issue now that it feels a little disingenuous. So I believe they do have an answer.
See?
Commissioner, if it's okay, I'd happy to answer. Again, for the record, Andy Mills, legislative liaison, through the chair, Representative Vance. Again, I have the benefit of being married to a lawyer, even though that doesn't give me a juris doctorate. I do have a attenuated translator, so to speak. For part of this, the way that I conceptualize the legal argument and then try to answer your question specifically, is this is like a business where we are to execute and make a successful business, but there are employees we have no say over conduct or performance or anything else. And it largely speaking, we have made progress, as Representative Suits has said, but there are elements that we have not seen any action friction that I don't think would be present if, again, if you're executing on something, you had the ability. So I wanted to just be sure to give an example that I think to me makes sense. Specifically for your question about the governor signing the bill, I do believe, again, with the unanimous vote, and we did talk about it numerous times in committee, that this legal issue loomed. But we were all hopeful with the reshaping work group to move forward on us. And AMHS, frankly, needs collaborative partnerships to move forward in a positive direction, because we have a lot of work. And even at the time of this bill, trying to work to stabilize the system and get things running, I do believe that we were moving forward with this because it is what was passed, knowing that there is this issue. And now that we've had the benefit of, back to my analogy, trying to execute on a business with some folks that there's no ability for us to have a say over, it's presented an issue that this EO seeks to solve. And to get one more clarification, Representative Suits did accurately say that the board had asked for lots of information from us, especially in that first year, that the department did have trouble fulfilling, to a standard that the board desired. And we did try to address that through numerous resourcing and other corrective measures. But the amount of information asked and provided to the board was so substantial compared to other efforts. And also, when it was provided and we attempted to clarify that information had been provided, we're not met with understanding that we had provided something that fulfilled the requirements. So, again, some of this is misunderstanding. Some of it is just being at odds because, again, we're answering to different folks. And so I just kind of described that, yes, I understand that HB 63 was signed by the governor, again, in good faith to get this rolling. But we had expressed on the issue in committee on the record that this was looming. And I think we've seen that it's presented continued issues that this EO seeks to correct.
Thank you, Mr. Mills. Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. Through the chair, first of all, let me say that this that legislation went through DOL before it ever was enacted into law. So it's legal. Second, it alarms me to hear you say we had no control over these board members. My opinion is you don't want a board where everybody thinks the same. You need a board that has different ideas that you can come together and move forward. But that's what thinking outside the box is to me, is having people come together with different ideas, putting them together and talking it over and getting a majority. But more than that, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I appreciate listening to the Department of Law, our attorney or assistant attorney general. But if you go to Ledge Legal, you're going to get exactly the opposite, that this is infringement on the different parts of our government between the executive branch and the different branches. It kind of reminds me of a expert witness. Depends on which side got the expert witness as to what they're going to say. So I'm really concerned, and I'm concerned as to what has motivated this EO. And I think that the board is really doing well, and I know that we have a senator that spent hours and hours and hours not only working with the board, but working with the department, DOT, in order to kind of fine-tune and get them on a straight line and where they're all speaking to each other and moving in the same direction. And I think it's been very successful.
Thank you, Representative Mr. Stutes. So any other questions? We could flog this equine for till it's really dead. But I think at this point, since there's no questions, seeing none, let the record reflect that the House Transportation Committee held a hearing on Senate Special Concurrent Resolution 8 as required by Uniform 49. This resolution will move on to a joint session when scheduled for such a session. That concludes our business today. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 12, 2024, when we will have a presentation from the Department of Revenue called Financing Infrastructure in Alaska. We'll be finance members. Then we'll hear HB 386 with a short title of Obstruction of Public Pit Places Trespassing. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:52.